Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 17 of the Two Sporting Muppets, where we take a casual look at the week that was in sport. And I'd like to introduce Gray back to the microphone.
Morning, Greg. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Not a bad week this week. Weather's starting to get warmer here in Australia, so it's nice to get outside.
Proper spring has sprung.
It is finally proper spring. I agree with you.
Although, was it La Nina is still around until January?
It's been
I believe.
Yeah, had a lot of rain earlier in the week, but really nice end to the week, and got out for a couple of runs this week, which is nice to get back out there. And as you said, that spring weather's really nice to be out and about. So
it is. Very athletic of you, mate. Well done. Now, this week, Greg, in our review, quieter, sort of like last week, but still a bit happening. So we will have a look at the T20 World Cup and the Rugby League World Cup, and there's plenty of netball around. We have the god of football managership plays a visit to Southwest Sydney, which is great to see. We'll head over to the US for a quick talk. And it's Christmas time for our punters with huge racing in Sydney and Melbourne this weekend. And, of course, on Tuesday with the Melbourne Cup. But we'll make a start on the T20 World Cup. Right, so major game last week. I know we talked about it. We're excited, weren't we? Two games. The letdown was Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, we got smashed. Let's be honest. It wasn't competitive.
Not at all. I mentioned...
Kudos to New Zealand. They played really well. They deserved everything. They were awesome. Played a great game.
They were professional, weren't they?
Yep. Just
methodical. Just did everything they needed to do. Batted first. Batted really well. Put the score on the board. The conditions before, they attacked from the start. The SCG is one of, particularly, isn't it? It's one of those wickets where it's best early. First five overs is a good time. Then the ball gets soft very quickly. Gets a bit harder as the innings goes on. But they started quick and kept going, basically. But it was very dominating.
Yeah, they controlled the game in both innings. I just felt they were all over it.
Scoreboard pressure, isn't it?
Yeah.
In T20, if you get that big total and you lose a couple of cheap wickets in reply, like particularly Warner getting out for the Aussies, it was always going to be hard.
It was the first ball, wasn't it?
Just his first ball, perhaps.
Yeah.
It was pretty early on.
Yeah.
And from there, it was always going to be tough going. And it was. Look, and no one stood up at all. They came and went. You know, we thought, okay, Finch, Stoinis didn't do anything. Maxwell didn't do anything. The no-show. We won't get into the debate about him at the moment, Greg, but he's one of those divisive cricketers, isn't he?
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, just a disappointing start to the tournament, but a great one for New Zealand. And then the much-anticipated...
huge match in Melbourne.
Pakistan and India with the $90,000 at the MCG. It was just great to see so many of the Australian, Indian and Pakistan communities just getting in there, having a great time. And not always the case, but it was great because the match was befitting of the occasion.
The game lived up to as you said, it lived up to the occasion. 90,000 fans there of Pakistan and Indian background. Some travelled long distance to be at that game. Huge history between the two countries, both on and off the sporting field, but on the sporting field, particularly in cricket, both cricket mad loving nations. And to see them play, but I will comment, huge history, but the way the game was played in great sportsmanship.
Yeah, I thought so.
Real respectful of both teams, acknowledged the achievements of both players when they bowled, scored well. But it was a game that went down to the last couple of balls.
It was exciting. And not just that, what I did like, Greg, was it wasn't just like 2020 can be where it's all about the batting. Pakistan bowled first, which some people might have thought was an interesting decision from Rahul, the captain now, wasn't it? But it hooped around, it seemed off the wicket.
Yep.
The first five overs, I think Pakistan were 20-odd runs.
No, struggling, yeah.
Really struggling. But, against good batters.
Yes.
it wasn't like they were mugs.
No, not at all. Pakistan, you know, we talked about which team turns up. Well, they're good. Pakistan turned up that day, and they are good batters with good records.
Yeah, and their bowlers, you know, they just put the ball on the spot. The Indian bowlers, they just found that really hard going. But what Pakistan did really well is they hung in there, as you do. You know, it's no good just throwing your wicket away and eventually after seven overs, they picked up the pace, didn't they? And made a competitive total. Well, really competitive. The young fast bowler, Afridi, see he's six towards the end. He's a really exciting young cricketer.
He scored a really important, I think it was only got 16, but he did it in just a few balls, and that was really important just to boost that score. I think they ended up with, 159.
I think
160 was the target, yeah.
And it was important because it looked at some stage that they wouldn't make, they'd only make 120, 130.
Yeah.
And batting first in a big game, runs on the board, always a good way to do it.
Yeah.
And the run chase, how exciting was that?
It was great. You know, Pakistan bowls started on fire. They bowled really well. India were struggling. They lost a few wickets.
And then Australia's nemesis and great rival, but highly respected.
Virat Kohli came to the crease.
And what a pro.
He took control of the game. I don't know, did he have a vision of where it was going? Because he just seemed in total control of when to hit, when not to hit. He just...
Never looked panicked, did he?
No.
Did you think at any stage that he'd left it too late to really get going?
No. I don't know why. If it was a different player, I would have said yes, but he just seemed in control and calm.
Yeah, it was almost Dhoni-like, wasn't it?
Yes, in the old days, yeah. Yeah,
Dhoni was like that, but Dhoni would always leave it until everyone thought it was too late. Until you think, even he knows it's too late, and you tell me I'll get it done. It was sort of like that, wasn't it? No panic from Kohli.
It was a great innings to watch, actually.
You know, obviously, it needed a lot to go right late, and it did. You know, no ball for six, wasn't it?
And, yeah, a wide called, and yeah.
Very exciting. And as we said, it was just so befitting of the crowd.
Of the occasion.
It'll be an event that they'll remember forevermore.
It would have been worthy of a World Cup final.
Oh.
You know.
And it would have been the best World Cup final of all time.
Yeah. So that's the, you know, it was just an awesome game all round.
And one thing I did think about, it's just great for cricket, isn't it? Regardless of what country you support, a full house at the MCG playing the game we love.
Without Australia playing. So they've still got 90,000.
That would have to be a record for a game in Australia.
I would think so. For a non-Australian game, yeah. I would have to think, I agree, that would have to be a record.
Surely. But yeah, no, just a great event. Although it wasn't the very first game, but a great way for the tournament to start. So, well done to India on that. Well, since then, there's been some interesting results, hasn't there?
Has been. It's been a bit up and down. And the weather's been a bit of an impact, let's be honest.
And we did predict that before the tournament. Look, probably the most significant was England had a stumble under the Duckworth-Lewis system.
This was probably the major weather-affected game that England got rolled by Ireland under the, which we both agree, flawed Duckworth-Lewis system.
Yeah, it's, I don't like the Duckworth-Lewis, but it's one of those things. I'm sure Cricket Australia, ICC would say, got a better way? Come in and see us. It's fun. What do you do? It's hard, isn't it? I think Ireland batted first.
I'm not sure.
Or were they second? I'm not sure. But, yeah, England only got about 12 overs in and they're 5 runs behind the designated total where they had to be. So, unfortunately, England didn't win that, which sort of potentially helps Australia.
I was about to say that it's actually a result, if anything, favours Australia.
So, what it means is, so England and Australia both lost one now. And they play tonight on the Friday night. So it means that whoever loses needs a miracle to make it to
really
the next
makes
stage.
It very difficult for the loser tonight in that pool to move forward.
Obviously, the host nation, they don't want them to lose. It's sort of, you know, when you've got this big tournament going on in your country, you want the host nation doing well. But look, England are a very good T20 team. Obviously, didn't play their best the other day, but they are really good and they beat us in those 3 warm-up matches. I might have mentioned last week, though, Greg, I always favour in a pressure game Australia, though.
Look, I think any sport, when they're pre-season or warm-up games, don't take too much notice of the results. because, you know, they're there for a whole range of reasons, but they're not there to win in a warm-up or preseason game. So I wouldn't take too much away from those results. And I think MCG in Australia, playing England, you know, great cricket rivalry, one of the best grounds in the world. It'll be a packed, it'll be a big crowd. I hope, and you would think Australia can rise to the occasion.
Like to think so. Look, mouth-watering though, the teams we've got, we know our team, how good we can be when we fire. But also England. They've got some great T20 players. As you just said,
they're a very good T20 team.
And, you know, captained by Josh Butler, who's a sensational player in his own right. So, look, fingers crossed the weather doesn't intervene. I think it'll be should be a great match. Just looking at the tables, Greg, so each team has played two matches. So in Australia's, probably the most interesting group, Australia's group. So New Zealand on top, Sri Lanka, England, Ireland, Australia are in fifth out of six at the moment. Afghanistan haven't won a game yet on sixth. So it'll be interesting to see who misses out. So yeah, it's going to be extremely hard now for the loser tonight to make it. Whereas the other groups, probably an upset result yesterday was Zimbabwe.
Yeah, you said they just beat Pakistan last night, yeah.
And that's Pakistan to a T, isn't it? Yeah. Almost beat India in a great match.
Take India to the last ball and then lose to Zimbabwe.
Although it was another nail biter. One run was the result, was the difference in Pakistan-Zimbabwe. But well done to them. Yeah, and the other group, you got India on top, South Africa, Zimbabwe in third now. Bangladesh, Pakistan and the Netherlands. So Pakistan and Netherlands haven't won a game yet. So they're really going to struggle to make it any further. But look, it's well balanced. A couple of games to go in the, is it one? One or two in the pool games. Then they move on to the quarterfinals.
Which is knockout from then on, isn't it? The quarterfinals becomes knockout? Yeah,
knockout from then. Yeah, and that's good to watch because the games mean so much, don't they?
Yeah, there's no second chances once you get to that.
No excuses, those quarterfinals, no
that's it.
So, interesting to watch that, but look, really looking forward to those fixtures. Rugby League World Cup, Greg. Been a little bit, not slower in terms of not quite as so many upsets as originally. Look, Australia, we played okay in our last game.
It was against Scotland, wasn't it?
Oh, the Scotland game. Which was... Yes, well, we predicted that it wouldn't be
that
competitive.
We mentioned that last week. It ended up exactly what we thought, 80-0.
Yeah, 84 zip. Look, Australia obviously were really good. Scotland not so. Look, Scotland had a dig. They just didn't have the players. It's that simple. Good hit out for our blokes. Look, Cleary in his first test played really well. All the debutants did. Probably the player of the match again was the Fox. Josh Adokar, was it?
He scored a few, scored three. I was going to say, he scored at least three, maybe four tries, yeah.
Right spot at the right time. So he's earned a rest. So he's not playing the next game. So, which basically means he's secured a spot for the major games. So very well deserved for him. Yeah, just a good solid hit out. I think it was it Campbell Graham scored three tries as well. So defence, they really struggled, the Scots, with the defence. But our blokes, you got to do what you got to do, don't you?
Can't play who's in front of you.
So heading to the business end, we've got I think it's one more pool game and then moving into the knockout stages. So just looking briefly at the table. So we're in Group B. So we're on top, Fiji, Italy and Scotland. So Fiji will be the most likely second one to go through.
Yep.
Group C, New Zealand on top, Ireland, Lebanon. So it'll be whoever wins that game will go through. England on top of theirs, Samoa, France, and Greece. So England, I'd say, will definitely be through. Samoa or Greece. Tonga on top, PNG, Cook Islands, and Wales. So it'll be Tonga and most likely PNG, but the Cook Islands will give it a good crack. So unfortunately for Italy, Greece, Wales, Jamaica, their World Cup will be over fairly soon, which is not unexpected.
No, let's be honest. It comes down to the... It'll probably come down to the big three again in the end, Australia, New Zealand and England in the, you know, when we get...
Always seems to.
Business end of the Rugby League World Cup.
Although we did speak briefly about Samoa And I said I wasn't quite prepared to write them off yet. And they played really well.
Yes, they did.
Look, against fairly weak opposition, must be said, but they did it. Yeah, I don't think they're done with yet. So I will look forward to seeing how they go. And it'd be good, the fact that Pacific nations are getting stronger. We're having a chat off air before. It will be worth a talk one day about, you know, how genuine is the Rugby League World Cup.
Yeah, what's the point? I mean, is it something we go deep in today? I don't know, but it seems to force... It's trying to convince us that there's a place for International Rugby League, and I'm not sure there is. I just said to Gray off air, how many people in Italy are aware there's a World Cup even happening, much less any of the players or the results? How many, you know, Lebanese people in Lebanon are tuning into their team playing in the Rugby League World Cup?
Yeah, how many Italians are in that team? Or actually live in Italy, I wonder.
Or are they just second-tier Australian-based people, players who can't make the Australian team? So anyway, that's a conversation for another day, yeah, I guess.
It is. But just very briefly, I would say it's not something you'd like to see die out over.
No, but I'm not convinced of it. Whereas I say that, the Samoan community in Samoa would be watching those games.
Oh. The Pacifica Tongan community, absolutely.
Fiji community, they're watching those games. So that part of the world, absolutely. But when you talk about Italy and Greece and Jamaica, you know, how many Jamaicans are staying up watching, knowing, come on, seriously.
Do they know what rugby league is?
Exactly. Give me a break.
No, predominantly, as you were chatting before, they would be mainly English players of Caribbean descent, you would think, like the brother of the Newcastle winger that plays in the NRL, for instance. Yeah. In fair dinkum department, the traditional New Zealand, England, Australia. Look, France, always lower ability, but thereabouts. The Pacific nations. Yeah, the other ones, well, yeah, that's a debate for another
day. They seem just to make up the numbers for an excuse to have a tournament, but that's just my opinion.
Very quickly, like rugby union in the past have tried to sprout how theirs is more genuine, but at the end of the day, it's not either. Because it is in terms of countries who play it, but in terms of who can win it, it's still the same.
Yeah. Although there has been, I agree with you, but the rise of Argentina in rugby union.
Yeah, that has been.
And they are generally based Argentinian players who Indeed. Play home games in Argentina. I mean, how many rugby league games are played in Italy or played in Greece? Yeah.
Look, Italy, at least, I don't think they are now because they made the Five Nations to Six Nations. They improved, but hasn't been the same success as Argentina's rise is, that's for sure. No, it has been a success story.
Well, just before we jump off what's your take on, and I won't give you my opinion, but I suspect it might be this take on who should be the halfback for Australia, Cherry Evans or Cleary?
Why is it a debate?
That's my point.
Cherry Evans. Now, number one, this is only my opinion as well, but incumbency was 3 years ago. So that's irrelevant. And I hate incumbency anyway, that discussion. They use it when it suits them and ignore it when it doesn't. So that annoys me. End of the day, if you ranked the top halfbacks in Australia, where would DCE be ranked? Yes, he's probably the best Queensland halfback.
Absolutely.
We've got others who I just think are as good as Cherry Evans. But regardless of that, the most important thing is that there's light years in ability between Cleary and DCE.
I agree with you at the moment. Now, DCE's done a good job in the past, not knocking his representation of Australia. But in any rep team, you pick the best players available.
That's what I feel and it's
I
all about.
I agree with you with this incumbency crap. You know, it doesn't matter that you played a year ago, 6 months ago, 2 weeks ago. You pick the best players for whatever sport that are available, that make themselves available to that team at that point in time. And Nathan Cleary is light years ahead of any other halfback at this present moment. So why we're having this fake discussion and commentary around who should be the halfback and Mal Meninger naming both of them in the team against Italy to, like, they're playing off for the position, please, when the games count. There shouldn't even be a discussion about it.
I wonder if it's just to be respectful to DCE.
Could be.
Because I remember, we might have chatted about this, I thought their real intentions were evident at the start when they named Tedesco captain and Cameron Murray and Isaac Yeo, I think, vice captains. I would have thought if DCE was going to be the starting halfback in the big games, he would have at least been vice-captain. I think he was vice-captain before. So I think to me that suggested that probably he wasn't he wasn't going to be there when it counted. The whole Queensland thing, as we debate all the time.
I was going to say, my cynical view is it's a back room argument around New South Wales versus Queensland and New South Wales Rugby League versus Queensland Rugby League and how many of each should be on the team.
I have faith in them that they're not stupid. And because potentially, if they don't play Cleary, if he's fit and they don't play him in those big games as the starting halfback, so arguably the best rugby league player in the world. So you're not going to have the best player in your team. It's not...
Yeah, I just don't know why we're having the conversation. It just seems like it's a forced conversation to me that shouldn't really be...
To not make DC feel bad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's a competitive world.
That's right.
And the only reason he's over there is because he's a Queenslander. Let's be honest about it.
Probably. He's a backup. And I think he's a backup halfback. And it's just to balance the Queensland numbers out.
Now, they could have found, you've even got players like Ben Hunt that equal as confident.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, Munster could play halfback.
I just thought, I'm wondering what your... We're sitting very much on the same side of the fence.
No, my summary, Greg, annoying. Don't know why they're doing it. Look, I know they have to fill up space, newspaper space and all that, but it's a conversation that, as far as I'm concerned, null and void. Shouldn't even be had light years apart.
Totally agree with you at this point in time. I totally agree with you.
So. And they can argue about combinations and all that crap all they like. Oh, a combination with Munster. Yeah, but what about Isaac Yeo and Cleary? Yeah. No, Cleary's just a way superior player.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's I think that's why it'll fall, but they just seem to be creating conversation and for no particular reason, but whatever. I just thought it was interesting when Mal Meninga named both of them in the team, like it's a trial to see which one's going to get the spot. Why are you trialing when one player's clearly better? It's just... I was just getting a bit annoyed with it, that's all.
Yeah, I'm annoyed in that on the surface, as I said, I maintain that they really know that they're going to play Cleary. But it's almost like when they say that, it's treating the public as fools.
Yes, that's how I feel.
We all know who the better player is. We all know when the whips are cracking who most likely, who absolutely should be the halfback. And if they don't do that, they're idiots. And look, Mal, yes, he's a Queenslander and they love each other and all that, but I don't think Mal's that stupid.
No, I don't. Look, when push comes to shove, I'm sure Cleary will get it as he should right now, but yeah, we'll just continue the circus of the media circus, which is...
Yes, and it'll go for... And the annoying part, it'll go until the quarterfinals start.
Just a frustrating read, that's all, and see it in the headline. Anyway, we'll move on.
You're doing better than me because I see the headline and that's as far as I go. I won't go into that. It's too frustrating. Like Greg, netball, some really exciting netball.
Yeah, we mentioned netball last week and that the...
Well, two games.
Two games there was.
Sunday, the final of the Constellation Cup, or it was the decider, wasn't it?
It was the decider of the Constellation Cup, which was held on the Gold Coast on Sunday night.
As I suggested to you, I'm not sure if it was on the pod or not. You always back Australia netball in those situations. They always just seem to find a way to win that deciding
match. I saw the end of the match. It was great. Beating New Zealand to maintain or... continue holding the Constellation Cup.
But isn't that a great rivalry? It ebbs and flows. New Zealand have won plenty of World Cups, World things, and so have we. There's never much between
Very them. Competitive. Really competitive.
And when you think of the population of both countries, compared to the UK, who are strong as well, it's just a real credit to them. And they played really well. Deserved it. But the most interesting one, for two reasons. On and off the field, but on the court, the Australia versus England.
That was on Wednesday night, held in Newcastle.
How exciting was that finish?
Great crowd. What an end to the game. So for those who didn't see it, the game was tied with about 8 seconds to go.
Yep. I don't think that's unfair.
England had the ball, were... to their credit, playing for a win. They could have just passed the ball and held it up and basically gone to full time and gone to extra time.
Sorry to interrupt you, mate. Because just before that, remember Australia had the ball.
Yes.
I think tried to shoot it, went it over the back.
Yes.
Back court.
And England passed him from the back line. That's right.
Sorry, as you
were. So then, England were you know, moving the trying to move the ball down the court quickly for the win, to get a win, as opposed to just playing it out for a draw and going to extra time. I think it was mid-court.
Roughly.
It was turned over and the Opals intercepted the pass, very quickly got it down to their goal shooter, who took a giant step, and with about 4 seconds to go, put a shot in and put them up by one.
Yeah, it was like, it was actually two steps, wasn't it?
It was two steps.
It was like a basketball layup.
To a step on the catch and then a step to shoot.
Yeah, I didn't know you could actually do that in netball.
My very novice knowledge thought it was whatever the term for travelling is in netball, but i.e. too many steps, but obviously not, because big steps, you couldn't miss them.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful shot.
It was.
And put Australia up by one and time ran out. It was a great finish to the game.
How exciting. And for all the people there watching, what an atmosphere.
Yeah, it would have been. And it was a good crowd in Newcastle. From what I saw on TV, it was a very good crowd.
And any contest between Australia and England. As you alluded to, though, well done to England. Traditionally, with England sporting teams, going for the win is not the English way, is it? It
hasn't been in other sports that we've
watched. It's often just conservative, try not to lose, and then worry about it in the extra time. But the fact they did that, I think, deserves some credit.
No, they were going for it, which was good, which gave Australia the opportunity, but it could have very easily gone the other way.
Very easily. I'm not sure how many in the series, because my wife and daughter are actually going. Part of her birthday.
I think there's three, but don't quote me on that.
There's one in Sydney this weekend, I think. Is it Sunday?
And there might be one down in Melbourne.
I think that's right. Yeah, so what a great series that is set up.
I think it's three games, but I could be wrong about that.
Now, the other part of netball, which even if you're not a sports fan, you would have heard about this during the week. Well, I know you wouldn't be listening to this anyway, if you're not a sports fan, our pod, but for anyone, was the sponsorship. Because it was Danielle Wallum, the Aboriginal lady. It was actually her debut too.
It was.
At 28 years of age. That's a good effort, isn't it?
Goal shooter who actually scored the winning goal with 4 seconds to go. So
she was the one that was uncomfortable with the sponsorship.
So she was the Indigenous player that spoke up a couple of weeks ago now against the Gina Rinehart mining company being
sponsorship
her, of the Diamonds.
And links to her father, who was a blatant racist.
Yes.
And all that, what he had
Hancock. Is that right?
Yes.
So it's Hancock Industries, is still the mining company. And that was the company that was sponsoring netball. And she put her hand up and said she was very uncomfortable representing with that company name on.
Because it's future sponsorship. It's not what they're.
No, it's not what they're
what
wearing
they got
now,
but it was 15 million?
15 million over 3 years.
Yep. Sponsorship deal. She wasn't comfortable and her teammates supported her. And basically the follow-on for that was created a fair bit of publicity. We spoke about that in a dive last week. And so the group, the Reinhardt group, just said, well, stuff you then.
Have withdrawn the sponsorship deal. Look, I think any company, there's real opportunity there for a company to jump on the back of that and really positive for them. So I'm sure that will be picked up somewhere from another.
You'd like to think
different
so.
Industry, different company. But I'm sure given the publicity, the success of the Diamonds at the moment, the negative publicity that got, not for the netball as such, but the players I think came out looking quite good for standing up for what they believed in. I think there's space there for a company to jump on that. I'm sure they'll pick up that sponsorship given the current climate around netball in Australia at the moment. And I hope they do, because their performance deserves to be sponsored.
They're a great team. They're great role models.
You know what? And I'm no netball fanatic. You know, haven't played myself. My daughter never played, but the couple of games I watched, which was the Sunday and the Wednesday, they were awesome games to watch. Just as a sports lover, they were fantastic games to watch.
Always competitive, always excellent to watch. Without going into that too much, Greg, is it now too much player power?
Look, it's a fine.
I know we spoke about this in our dive last week. We won't go too far into it, but is it? Who's running? I guess people are saying who's running the asylum.
Is it the organisation, and in this case, Netball Australia, do research on the background of their sponsors rather than just take the dollar sign? There's got to be some sort of ethical standard, whether it's environmental. In this case, it was cultural. It wasn't about the environment of mining. It was about the views and the fact that Gina Ryan had many opportunities to say that was in the past. That's not representative of our businesses now.
silence was deafening.
The silence was deafening, and I think that was the point. I think had of Gina Rinehart used the opportunity to speak up against what her father had said previously. She didn't say it, her father did, but she also hasn't rescinded or apologised or taken back those comments, and still Hancock name is on the name of the company. So I can see where the players...
Yeah. And the wealth, and let's face it, the wealth of the company is originally from what her father started.
She's inherited. She hasn't built that business. She's inherited. And she had an opportunity there, I think, to take the higher ground and possibly rectify that situation, and would have looked, put her company really in good light, I believe. But what we're left with is the, you know, the Facebook messages and the Twitter replays of his racist comments on the ABC TV. I don't know if you've seen those.
Look, I haven't in the but I saw them years ago.
Been over social media a lot this week in that interview on the ABC where he made those comments about breeding out Aboriginal people, basically. It was only in the 80s too, the 1980s. Yeah, we're not talking back in the 50s.
Yep.
We're talking about the 1980s that he made these comments on public TV. And she hasn't taken a step back. And I think she had the opportunity to, not step back, but actually apologise on behalf of the company now and their, where they stand Indigenous issues right now.
This is not what we stand
and
for.
And that could have healed a lot, I think, moving forward. And that, as you, your comment, the silence was deafening from her. And I think that had a lot to play with, play into it. So I think, you know, go back to your point, the organisation signing on the dotted line represents the players, I think has a place to look at the ethical backgrounds, whether it be on that case racial stance or environmental stance, or those sort of things.
Yeah, and just
and
who
not
they
just blindly sign for the dollars.
Yeah. Thinking though, and I guess too, you could say, but end of the day, the Rinehart group pulled out.
Yes.
It wasn't a decision from
Netball Australia. No, Netball Australia didn't stand down. So you talk about player power. The players didn't, they spoke up, but Netball Australia didn't withdraw and back away. The Rinehart organisation, as you said, withdrew their sponsorship. So, yeah, the player voice probably put some power in that and had a bit to play in it. But Netball Australia didn't support their players in terms of withdrawing from the sponsorship deal.
No. So, interesting to see what happens next, as you mentioned before. I think it may not be the same, exactly the same dollars.
May not be, but I think
it could be more. You know.
The company that steps in now will look like a bit of a saviour and stepping in where
it's a
company. So I think there's a real opportunity there for a company.
It's extra, isn't it? That they'll get more credit than just a normal sponsor stepping in.
I think so. I really think so.
A bit like, remember J-Car, after all the debacles at the Bulldogs, you know, the Coffs Harbour thing,
yes,
in the early 2000s, and who stepped in, and it actually, rather than being derided for it, I think they were actually, you know, the fact that they said, well, yes, they've admitted their errors and they're trying to build a new club, and actually supported them.
And we'll be part of this moving forward rather than on the history. And I think they came out, as you said, probably looking good and did their business well at the time.
Indeed. So we'll see what becomes of it
next week
or two. Now, something very interesting, I think you forwarded this to me yesterday, was the god of football managing, Sir Alex Ferguson, dropped in his former player and friend, Dwight York, who's coaching MacArthur Bulls in the A-League, and they're based out at Campbelltown, Lamia, at the Campbelltown Stadium where the West Tigers play. And so Sir Alex, Dwight knew he was coming, but the players...
Players had no idea from what I read and understood.
Yeah, and in walks Sir Alex.
One of the greatest football managers of all time.
What a pleasure.
Turns up in All Grounds, Campbelltown. It just blew my mind. It just blew me away.
Yep, Campbelltown and, you know, a very, very solid of the earth, working class area of Sydney.
Very much so. For those who don't know, it's on the southwest outskirts of Sydney. It's 50 Ks from the CBD?
Yeah, about 50 Ks.
But as you said, very, very working class.
Working class, but definitely sports loving.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And lots of soccer. Look, there's lots. Soccer is very popular in southwest Sydney. Lots of, you know, ethnic roots, particularly Great British. I know, you know, working there, lots of families, you know, of English, Scottish origin, just love their soccer. Yeah, and to have...
And MacArthur Rams is one of the newer teams. They've only been in two. This might be their third season, I think. And Dwight York, obviously, football legend.
Oh, and well, joking before, All Night Dwight and his love of a good time. I'm not sure how he would rate Campbelltown RSL or
Campbelltown the Catholic Club,
but compared to what where he normally frequents. But hey, he might give him some tips, or they might impress him, showing something he doesn't know. But all jokes aside, no, great for the would have been a buzz, wouldn't it,
for those players just to have someone of that stature turn up unannounced in their ground. Just would have blown them away.
And he wasn't. And we're talking about the working class roots. Alex is working, as rich as he is now, as working class as they come.
Came from very deep working class roots, as you just pointed out. Yeah.
Public housing in Glasgow. You know, very, very modest.
Tough upbringing.
I think just a great moment. And look, it was no big noting. He didn't do media questions.
Not at all.
No.
But he did speak to the players.
Yeah, he spoke to the players and. Yeah, he took photos with
the players and things like that.
Good little segue, Greg. I'll skip a few little points because Alex is actually in the country because he's a mad horse racing person. He owns lots of horses, and he just loves the nags. So he's actually in town to attend at Rosehill tomorrow, the Golden Eagle, big race event, to coincide with the Derby Day, which is in Flemington. So Derby Day is also tomorrow. Which is a great day. I've been there twice now. It is, for horse racing people, because you get in the one day, you get the Derby, McKinnon Stakes, just so much.
Big race day. For racing fans, huge race day.
Well, great lead up to the Melbourne Cup because lots of people travel from interstate for both days, Melbourne Cup on Tuesday and the Derby Day. But Sir Alex reportedly will attend Rose Hill tomorrow in Sydney and then fly down for Melbourne Cup Day.
On Tuesday.
Now, speaking of which, Flemington was almost underwater last week.
I saw an aerial photo of this and it was flooded. The surrounds of the race course, Flemington, were flooded and the race course itself was fine, but apparently there's a barrier or something built around it for that very reason.
Yeah, I saw a story. I think it might have been a current affair. Where goes a little bit away from sport, I know, but to protect the course, they build a barrier, sort of like a levee bank barrier thing. So if the river behind it was to rise, I've forgotten the name of the river, to protect Flemington, but unfortunately it did do a good job of that, but it flooded the suburb behind it.
It pushed the water back the other way.
And lots of people's homes were just ruined almost. And they were saying, look, at the end of the day, we love horse racing, love our sport, is it that important for people to lose their homes?
Where's the priority, suburb was hugely damaged just for the sake of a race course.
Yeah.
I have issues with that. But anyway, that's not a sport.
Didn't quite seem right. But anyway, that's Flemington is not underwater.
And good to go for Tuesday.
Good to go for Tuesday. Look, I think there's a bit of weather around Melbourne. So who knows whether it'll be a weather. Could be a heavy track. But, which changes lots of things because often with the imported horses who run a lot in the UK, used to heavier tracks. As always, there'll be a million stories coming out of that and all the lead-up of the 20 certainties to win the Melbourne
Cup.
That's
right.
Every time it's the one horse who does. Look, for really serious punters, it's normally often a race they stay clear of.
It's too hard. Yeah.
It's just, it's a two-mile handicap race. It's a lottery, but it is the race that stops the nation.
It is.
So good luck to everyone having a punt. So you don't punt at all, Greg? I know just have a mystery.
Oh, I might trifecta. Put something on, but very, yeah. Well,
just for the interest. It is a great, having said that, I do love a day at the races.
And I have been to the races a few times. It is a good day.
As I said, Derby Day twice. Yep. Really, really good day. Very, very crowded, obviously, down there at Flemington, but yeah. No, but good luck to all our punters who are listening. Great time of the year for you guys. Look, just briefly, Greg, in North America, the Major League Baseball. So the championship series were held.
Yep.
They finished up last week.
The National League and the American League.
All the gun teams, except for Houston, are Gonski.
They got knocked out, yeah.
So the Padres, who did so well.
To get as far as they did.
As far as they did, and they played really, really, really well. But they were defeated by the Phillies for them?
Yes. Was that 4-1?
I think so. Yeah, the Phillies were 4-1.
I think Padres got one game out of that series and Phillies
So well done to Philadelphia.
Yep.
Who had a really good year, but I don't think they were the main fancies.
No,
at all, but just got the business done quite, you know, without much fuss the whole season. So the Phillies have made it to the World Series, and so the Astros were up against the Yankees, and the Yankees, you know, being the most well-known team and the wealthiest team, and they won, you know, over 100 games in the regular season.
Yeah.
They got rolled 4-0.
4-0. Astros did it 4-0.
I think last pod we spoke, I think at Houston were 2-0 up.
Yep, they were at the point, yeah.
They'd been at home. We're saying I don't think it'll be as easy.
Yeah, well, they got those two games in Yankee Stadium. And I actually watched the last four innings of the game four. They were good. It was good. Good to watch.
Yeah. Look, one interesting point, with the MLB season being so long, 162 games, it's almost like the foreign teams, just because they have to play so long, eventually going to lose form at some stage.
They have to.
And they often lose form.
Yeah, and it's one of those playoffs. With their playoff series being so long, do they really want to be in best form for the whole season?
Yeah,
or do you balance it so you're coming into form you've got to guarantee yourself in the playoffs? But the playoff series can be so long themselves, you want to be coming into form in that, you know, back third of the season.
You do, and you sort of...
But you don't want to lose too many early because you'll put yourself out.
You need to make it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wonder how much the roster management... I mean, roster management is always big for the pitchers because, you know, a pitcher can't play one game and play the next day. Obviously, there's that rest time in between. But yeah, with their roster as well, just so you don't have, like you said, players just getting a bit tired or losing form. And yeah, it'd be a real balancing act, I would imagine. And we mentioned last week, so the Dodgers, who 110 games, which is most games for a long time, rolled.
Yes.
Yankees, fantastic. Rolled. The Mets, over 100 games, didn't make it past the wild card.
Yep.
So, yeah, so it just shows you, doesn't it, any final series. Just got to make it. It
starts again every time, doesn't it? Once that regular season's over, it's like a new competition each time.
And if you play well,
put yourself there, anything can happen.
Yeah. Look, I haven't seen it officially, but I would imagine the Astros are pretty heavy favourites.
I think so, but I haven't seen any odds or anything on it.
But you never know. Look, the Phillies have been, you know, putting people, making people, you know, allowing people to write them off and showing them.
Keep winning at the right time, so we'll see what happens. So that series starts...
Tomorrow,
Saturday. It's actually Friday, but Saturday Australia time.
Yeah, Saturday Australia time. If it goes 7 games, it'll finish next Saturday.
I don't know. Is the first game in Philadelphia or Houston?
I'm not sure. I think it might be in Philly.
Okay,
but I'm not totally sure. It'll be a really good contest. Both, you know, obviously got. We have to be to get that far. Really good players, but probably the Astros, Altuve being one. I think it's Hernandez. Really strong players. And look, and they've done it before. Phillies, I don't think, have been around in the playoffs that much, whereas Houston they won the World Series a couple of years ago and have been in the finals probably...
The last few years, haven't they?
Yeah, about every time the last few years. Okay, so the World Series, Greg. So, yeah, it's Philly, first two games in Philly, then the next three... in Houston, and then they go back to Philly for two if need be. So we'll see how that goes.
Looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah. And look, the NFL. NFL's, you know, starting to move along.
It's really getting mid-season now, isn't it? Yeah.
Now, unlike last few years, there's only one team that's really struggling. Detroit, who have been a struggling team for quite a few years, they've only won one game. But all the other teams, you know, a lot of teams are like 3-4. I think they've played 7 games now. Like, you know, 3-4 or even 2-5 being the worst, but lots of teams, you know, just around that middle. And once again, we spoke about the New York teams
You said they're doing really well, which is really unusual in recent times.
Recent times, particularly the Jets have been perennial strugglers. The Giants have been down there. And at the moment, I think Giants are 6-1 and the Jets are 5-2.
Peter, see if they can maintain that till the... throughout the season.
No, I'm particularly the Jets fans, you know, who are, they are long-suffering. Yeah. And for that, but also other results, look, the good teams are looking pretty good. The Kansas City, look, not that they're saying they're that good, but my team, the Bengals, they're starting to get it done. Baltimore Ravens doing quite well. Yeah, it's just once again, the next month we'll say
how's, how's Tampa Bay going with Brady coming in retirement, back out of retirement?
Yeah, look, I think they're about not great. I think they're, but not bad either. I think they're 3-4.
Okay.
Heck, they had a couple. They have had a couple of bad losses though. I saw Brady had a really, you know, I don't know if you saw it on the news, get stuck into them, his teammates, about effort and attitude and all that. Yeah, so just looking quickly at the table, so AFC East, so the Bills, who are one of the favourite teams, really good team, they're 5-1, Jets 5-2, Dolphins 4-3, and Patriots on the bottom, but still 3-4.
Yeah,
still not in a bad position.
Yeah, nearly, yeah.
And it's like that mainly throughout. Chiefs 5-2, Chargers 4-3 in the AFC West. So you've got Ravens 4-3, Bengals 4-3, Titans 4-2. And in the, that's the American Conference, and the National Conference, yeah, Philadelphia, 6-0.
Wow.
Yeah. They've introduced a bye now. They've made the season 1 week longer. So teams, so they've only played 6 games, not 7. So they've won every one. Look, Giants, as I said, 6-1. Cowboys, 5-2. And NFC West is very, like I was saying, so Seahawks 4-3 on top, but then it's the Rams 3-3, 49ers 3-4, Cardinals 3-4. So you see what I mean? There's no one's
jumping out as
no really bad or really
even the teams at the bottom of the conference have still got wins and look competitive.
So this one, which the Lions are in, Vikings 5-1, Packers and Bears 3-4, then the poor Lions 1-5, and similar, the Buccaneers are 3-4, but they're still on top of their division.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, so another month or so, I think we'll say a lot. They'll probably start to settle a bit.
Yeah.
Look, in terms of transfers and that, you know what American sports are like. There's stuff going on every week. Left, right. The Jets lost their running back, who's really strong, so they've traded someone else in. In terms of court, different sport to our footies, though, isn't it? The quarterback is just everything.
Yeah.
Offensively.
From what I've worked out, yes, really, you know, it's why they're valued so highly that.
Yes, their
team's very much driven by the quality of their quarterback from what I can work out.
Yeah, so very, very well paid for good reason. And so it all revolves around them. Yeah, but look, NFL every Monday morning, for those who don't catch it, if you've got Foxtel through ESPN, you can download their app to watch Red Zone. Red Zone's my favourite. It's where they go to all the grounds. So they cross whenever the action's happening, where it's happening at. And yeah, so you get to see bits of every game. And it's quite exciting. NFL, I really like it, but a whole game is
it's a long
bit of a stretch.
Yeah,
yeah, just because of the.
It's not the fastest moving game. Let's be honest.
Not a fast moving game. Very technical game. Very, very good game. But yeah, can be for us Aussies who are used to, you know, reasonably exciting, fast moving sport most of the time, except for Test cricket. Red Zone just really hits the spot. Yeah, but so that's our little North American wrap, unless you've got some NBA.
No, NBA is just very early. Most teams only played 4 or 5 games. Most of the talking point about the NBA at the moment is how bad the Los Angeles Lakers are. You know, storied franchise, one of the richest franchises, you know, but they have LeBron James, who many argue is the greatest of all time. I don't. I still am an MJ fan, will always be an MJ fan. LeBron's amazing. Can't, you know, he would be number two, but to me, MJ will always be the GOAT. But they've got LeBron, who's still scoring, putting up big numbers, but the team is just awful. They don't gel. They can't score. They've lost their
Do they have the ability on paper?
No, not with the current makeup. Right. They need to make change. We talk about being, you know, the market of change in American sports. They need to change their team. They need to do something. The problem they've got is they haven't got much to trade because they... A few years ago with New Orleans Pelicans, they actually traded a lot of their future picks to get Anthony Davis to play with Ron. And they did win a championship. They won the bubble championship, the one that COVID year where it was all played in Orlando, all in the Disney site, ESPN's site in Orlando. So all the teams went there and Los Angeles did win that champ. So it was only 2 years ago they won a championship. But then they traded picks to get Russell Westbrook, who just hasn't fitted.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's a good player.
Has been a former MVP, so but doesn't fit with them. isn't scoring, can't even, you know, I think LeBron made the comment in a news conference this week, they couldn't throw a penny in the ocean at the moment, which is true.
Yeah.
Their percentage shot percentage is below 30. It's just appalling. So they're going to need to make changes to do anything with that team, but they've got nothing to trade. And the irony is that even if they come last, they haven't got their draft pick this year.
Because they already traded it.
New Orleans own their draft pick. So even if they come last and get a high pick, one or two or three, New Orleans are going to have it because they traded that pick.
Oh,
so
dear.
They're in a tough position. So it'll be interesting to see what the Lakers do about this season. But yeah, I'll do a few more updates when we get a bit more in the season, starts getting a bit more clear cut how the teams are going. But yeah, most of the talk's around the Lakers and what they're going to do. So that'll take up some headlines. But yeah, we'll check in with NBA again next week and see how we're going, see if the Lakers can actually
win a game or two.
I think they're the only team that haven't won yet.
Oh, that's a worry.
I think they might be the only team that don't have a win on the board yet.
And particularly for such a tough market.
Absolutely.
In LA.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the Clippers are quite strong, aren't they?
Clippers are really good. They've got some injuries concerns and they're managing players who are coming back from injury, but they've got a really deep roster. They've won and lost. Whereas Lakers just, anyway, we'll see what happens there.
Indeed, we will. Well, in terms of our review, Greg, that's us. I have had a thought for a very, very quick, not a dive, just a bit of fun.
Bit of chat, yep.
Yep, so look, we both love our music. So we're just going to have when we come back, we're just going to have a very short chat, or just a brainstorm of sport and music.
Okay.
Sort of sporting type songs. Right. What resonates for you.
All right.
And might open it up for some of our listeners to give their thoughts.
See what we come up with in a few minutes. All right. Thanks, Greg.
See you soon. Welcome back, everyone. As promised, Greg and I are back just for a short little chat, a brainstorm, really. We're talking about music and sport. There's two sorts of songs, we agreed. There's songs about sport. So actually, you know, the lyrics mention sports, or it might even have some music to represent sports. And sort of like sporting anthems. You know, just sort of background songs or theme songs that have played with certain sports or with certain events which people sort of resonate with. So there's always been a connection with sport and music, hasn't there?
And you know, a lot of athletes will use music to, you know, a lot of athletes you see in all sports with headphones on before a game, getting, you know, mentally in the right place, and use music as a bit of a motivation. Yeah. Certainly in basketball, all sports now, you see the warm-up with headphones on or going into the stadium with headphones on, and it's all a part of getting in the right mindset and zone and getting themselves ready.
For sure. And also for the spectators. Any sporting event, what's blasting out of the speakers before
Absolutely.
The game?
Absolutely.
The sporting, you know, the songs to get people, as you said, in the similar mindset,
yep.
ready to go. So speaking of that, look, a fairly loose direction, Greg, but what songs resonate with you?
Look, there's one that stands out to me, and you know, it's very much a culturally Australian one, but that's the Men at Work song Down Under. Particularly came to fame again with the America's Cup, Australia 2 winning the America's Cup, and Alan Bond used it as a theme song, and I think that resonates with a lot of Australians from that era. It's used a lot as still, but particularly around that America's Cup and when Australia, first country to win the America's Cup away from America.
It was a huge event.
It was
in
huge.
Australia,
1982,
wasn't
it? If I remember correctly.
It was 82, 83. The actual Down Under song was only a year, probably 2 years before that.
I think so, yeah.
And it actually got it back into the top 10.
Yeah.
That's how popular it was. No, it's a great one. I was thinking, you know, just about songs that are often played at sporting events, rugby league finals. I reckon close to the last 20 years now, they always play Kashmir by Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Now that the lead up to it.
Yep.
Kashmir, Eye of the Tiger is always popular with sports.
Great. Come from a great sporting movie. One of the Rocky movies obviously made that famous, but then it's been picked up as a motivation song by a lot of other athletes and sports.
And particularly clubs that, well, my club, the West Tigers, have a version of it. You know, clubs that have a Tiger connection, but yeah, just for motivation and, you know, the lyrics of it all about not giving up and, you know, the challenge of our rivals. Songs that with sport, which you get, I thought, why? Remember the sort of modernized version of that Hey Baby? Hey Baby, what is it? I'm not going to sing it for you, mate, but...
No, I don't remember it. I don't want you to sing it, but no.
Yeah, because it sort of has the ooh, ah,
Oh, the baby song. Yeah, yeah. So, yes, I've caught up. Yep, I know.
I want to know if you'll be my girl.
Yeah, yep, got it.
Yeah.
The dancing baby song.
Yeah. 5 years ago, it just became so popular at lots of sporting events. Sports songs. I don't know. You're a Crinance fan, John Fogarty?
Yeah, not huge, but yes.
John Fogarty is a huge baseball fan, and he has a song called Center Field.
Mm-hmm.
A really good song.
No, I must check it out.
Yeah, no, it is. It's just about, you know, basically he puts himself as a kid or a player on a bench saying, hey, coach, I'm ready to go. And when he plays it live, he actually has it made. He's got a shape like a baseball bat.
Okay. No, I haven't seen it. I haven't heard it.
That's an American one that I sort of remember when we talk about sport and music.
All right, question for you then. Both Mick Jagger and Elton John, huge cricket
fans.
Have they ever written, or can you think of a cricket-based song from either of them? I can't. I asked the question, seriously. I can't, but I know they're both huge cricket tragics.
Yep. Speaking of cricket, cricket is the line in that sort of reggae song. I don't like reggae, I love it.
Yes.
I'm sure there's a...
There is a reference to cricket in that.
Yeah, because Channel 9 then used that, changed it from reggae to we don't like cricket, we love it. Yeah, but you're right. For two such huge fans...
I can't think of a song that they've referenced the sport in any of their...
No.
Music. That I could be wrong with that. And Rolling Stones have a huge, both massive catalogues of music. So
yeah, you sort of wonder why the crossover.
Yeah. It just made me think of that when we're talking about that.
I certainly, any hardcore fans, let us know.
Yeah.
But I can't think of one myself. I was thinking too, with famous singers who are huge sports nuts, I can't think of too many of them. Apart from like Fogarty, who I just mentioned.
Yeah, none are springing to mind.
That actually bring it across. Look, another aspect, obviously, of music and sport is the theme songs for clubs.
Yes.
You know, here in Australia, it's huge with AFL particularly. Yep. The NRL teams have songs. Probably Cronulla's probably the one that's most pop, that they use it a lot. The Up Up Cronulla to the tune of Roll Out the Barrel. If you're not a Cronulla fan, seriously, how embarrassing. When you're at Shark Park and it's played, you just shake your head. But look, they absolutely love it. It's something that doesn't quite resonate with fans like the AFL ones do.
No.
AFL fans, I don't know, you could argue they're a bit more fanatical.
Oh, I don't think you have to argue. I think
it's fact,
isn't it? It's proved, I think the AFL have a much stronger fanaticism.
Yeah, and after every game in the AFL, the theme song is played and all the crowd sing along.
And look, I've been to a couple of games more recently with you, and the clubs, NRL does that. The winning club gets there. I know when we went to one of the finals, Cronulla versus the Bunnies, and the Bunnies song was played, you know, loudly. Earlier in the year, we went to Tigers and Dragons, and the Dragons song played for that. So I think the NRLs try it. And look,
They should.
I believe they've taken that from the AFL. That's not that's direct. You know, translation from what AFL have done since success in it. So I think they're trying to push it, their club songs, but I don't think it's at the same level that the AFL that I've experienced.
No, the AFL, it has been for many years.
Yeah.
Sort of from the 70s, I think most of those songs were recorded. Obviously, Swan supporters, the Swanee song, yes. Cheer, cheer, the red and the white. Well, obviously, in the States, they call them, what do they call them in baseball? They call them, they've got a name for them. But my baseball team, the Mets, is known as having one of the more popular ones, Meet the Mets.
Okay.
They have a character, Mr. Met and Ball, and the song's actually quite good. And a lot of people have commented, it's ironic, shit club, good song. and they're all of varying quality.
Speaking of songs, sorry, segue, but AFL song up there, Kazali.
Oh,
and songs about, we're struggling, but there's a song about the sport directly.
And look, and an absolute ripper.
And it comes out every grand final. As it should.
Oh, gives Mike Brady a run every year.
Yep.
He does it. Some good AFL songs, like Up There Kazali. There was a one, Paul Kelly's done one, Leaps and Bounds.
Actually, Paul Kelly's written a song about Shane Warne.
Has he? And he's also done Don Bradman.
Who I can't remember. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And Paul. I have both of those on an album and I can't think of the name of them. But yeah.
There you go. But you're right, Up There Kazali, good one. There's another one he did, One Day in September. Not quite as popular, but song that was, it's quite well liked, and I liked it. Channel 7 probably had it as their theme for about 15 years when they was, it's what I like about football. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it was quite a good song, I thought. NRL, the Tina Turner days, is probably what resonate. Probably the two with NRL, the Tina Turner, with the Simply the Best. Originally, it was what you, what was it? Oh, the boys one. What is it?
What you see is what you get.
Yeah, what you get is what you see.
Yeah.
And then the huge one was the Simply the Best.
Simply the Best.
And that was the league anthem for nearly 10 years, wasn't
it? Yeah, they used that. And they redid it with her and then Jimmy Barnes.
Yep.
Did it together. And
yeah, they milked it for everything.
They did milk it. It was a good campaign.
It was. And look, and then the Hooded Gurus.
I thought that was a good one too, yep. Where they reworked one of their songs.
That's My Team. And then really popular. Look, probably the most famous, one of the most famous ones in the world. It came from apparently in England in the 50s and 60s, they would play the top hits of the day over the speakers before the game. And Liverpool, I think it's from Roger, it's some Rodgers and Hammerstein play, Carousel or something, You'll Never Walk Alone.
I don't know what show it's from, but I know the song, and I've seen
it. I can't stand it. I think it's a shit song.
They do an amazing job of
but
it.
But they do a great
when the
job
crowd sings it. I've not experienced it, but I've seen it, you know, even when the crowd, when they tour, it's done globally.
Yep.
And it's quite phenomenal, actually.
Yeah, it is. When they sing it, yeah. Like I said, I'm not a fan of the song. I just think, Jesus, couldn't they pick a better song? But having said that, My Team West Ham, similar type of song about blowing bubbles.
Okay.
Forever Blowing Bubbles.
Right.
Their song. But yeah, the one that around the world everyone knows is You'll Never Walk Alone. And that's now, it's their logo, isn't it? You'll Never Walk Alone. And look, it's something that Liverpoolians just loved it and it stuck. Yeah. And now it's part of their branding.
It is.
So yeah, music and sport always have that connection. And something we can look at another day, Greg, is that crossover between musicians that played sport and sportsmen who become musicians.
That could be interesting.
Yes. With varying degrees of success.
Success, yeah, fair enough. Mm.
But listeners, if you would please send us in some...
Yeah, if you've got any connections that resonate with you with songs and sport or music and sport that...
And there's lots more. Like you said, we just by talking...
That was just coming off the top of your head quickly, yeah.
The next week, I'm sure we'll think of plenty more.
Yeah.
But please send us an email at...
twosportingmuppets@gmail.com. Number twosportingmuppets@gmail.com. Love your feedback, ideas. But yeah, if you've got anything on the back of that, you know, motivation or theme songs or just connections between music and sport, let us know. You know, if we're not talking about sport, Gray and I are talking about music. So they're probably...
That's right. Our two things that we like to drivel on about. But Greg, that will do us for
another,
today.
Another great week. Thanks, mate.
That's all right. Good. No problem at all. A good little chat. And hope everyone has a great week. Good luck to the Australian punters, Melbourne Cup.
Yep. And those of us in the Southern Hemisphere enjoying the real spring weather moving forwards.
Indeed. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you and have a great week.